Chapter 11. What Lies Hidden. Clad in her shift, Egwene drew a deep breath and left the stone ring lying beside an open book on her bedside table. All flecked and striped in brown and red and blue, it was slightly too large for a finger ring, and shaped wrong, flattened and twisted so that a fingertip run along the edge would circle both inside and out before coming back to where it had started. There was only one edge, impossible though that seemed. She was not leaving the ring there because she might fail without it, because she wanted to fail. She had to try without the ring sooner or later, or she could never do more than dabble her toes where she dreamed of swimming. It might as well be now. That was the reason. It was. The thick leather-bound book was A Journey to Tarabon, written by Urien Romavny from Kandor, 53 years ago, according to the date the author gave in the first line, but little of any consequence would have changed in Tanchico in that short a time. Besides, it was the only volume she had found with useful drawings. Most of the books only had portraits of kings, or fanciful renderings of battles by men who had not seen them. Darkness filled both windows, but the lamps gave more than adequate light. One tall beeswax candle burned in a gilded candlestick on the bedside table. She had gone to fetch that herself. This was no night to be sending a maid for a candle. Most of the servants were tending the wounded or weeping over loved ones, or being tended themselves. There had been too many for healing any but those who would have died without it. Elaine and Nynaeve waited with high-backed chairs pulled to either side of the wide bed, with its tall, swallow-carved posts. They tried to hide their anxiety with differing degrees of success. Elaine managed a passably stately calm, and only spoiled it by frowning and chewing her underlip when she thought Egwene was not looking. Nynaeve was all brisk confidence, the sort that made you feel comforted when she tucked you into a sickbed. But Egwene recognized the set of her eyes. They said Nynaeve was afraid. Avienda sat cross-legged beside the door, her browns and grays standing out sharply against the deep blue of the carpet. This time the Aiel woman had her long-bladed knife at one side of her belt, a bristling quiver at the other, and four short spears across her knees. Her round hide buckler lay close at hand, atop a horn bow in a worked leather case with straps that could hold it on her back. After tonight, Egwene could not fault her for going armed. She still wanted to hold a lightning bolt ready to fling herself. Light! What was that Rand did? Burn him, he frightened me almost as badly as the Fades did. Maybe worse. It isn't fair he can do something like that and I can't even see the flows. She climbed onto the bed and took the leather-bound book on her knees, frowning at an engraved map of Tanchico. Little of any use was marked, really. A dozen fortresses surrounding the harbor, guarding the city on its three hilly peninsulas, the Verana to the east, the Maceta in the center, and the Calpena nearest the sea. Useless. Several large squares, some open areas that seemed to be parks, and a number of monuments to rulers long since dust. All useless. A few palaces and things that seemed strange. The Great Circle, for instance, on the Calpena. On the map it was just a ring, but Master Romavny described it as a huge gathering place that could hold thousands to watch horse races or displays of fireworks by the illuminators. There was also a king's circle on the Maceta and larger than the Great Circle, and a panarch's circle on the Verana, just a little smaller. The chapter house of the Guild of Illuminators was marked as well. They were all useless. The text certainly had nothing of use. "Are you certain you want to try this without the ring?" Nynaeve asked quietly. "Certain," Egwene replied as calmly as she could. Her stomach was leaping as badly as it had when she saw that first Trolloc tonight, holding that poor woman by the hair and slitting her throat like a rabbit's. The woman had screamed like a rabbit, too. Killing the Trolloc had done her no good. The woman was as dead as the Trolloc. Only her shrill scream would not go away. If it doesn't work, I can always try again with the ring. She leaned over to mark the candle with a thumbnail. Wake me when it burns down to there. Light, but I wish we had a clock. Elaine laughed at her, a light-hearted trill, and it very nearly sounded unforced. A clock in a bedchamber? My mother has a dozen clocks, but I never heard of a clock in a bedchamber. Well, my father has one clock, Egwene grumbled. The only one in the whole village, and I wish I had it here. Do you think it will burn that far in an hour? I don't want to sleep longer than that. You must wake me as soon as the flame reaches that mark. As soon as.
We will, Elaine said soothingly.
I promise it.
The stone ring, Avienda said suddenly. Since you are not using it, Egwene, could not someone, one of us, use it to go with you?
No, Egwene muttered.
Light, I wish they could all come with me.
Thank you for the thought, though.
Can only you use it, Egwene? The Aiel woman asked.
Any of us might, Nynaeve replied. Even you, Avienda. A woman needn't be able to channel, only sleep with it, touching her skin.
A man might be able to, for all we know. But we do not know Telairan Riod as well as Egwene, or the rules of it.
Avienda nodded.
I see. A woman can make mistakes where she does not know the ways, and her mistakes can kill others as well as herself.
Exactly, Nynaeve said. The world of dreams is a dangerous place. That much we do know.
But Egwene will be careful, Elaine added, speaking to Avienda, but obviously meaning it for Egwene's ears. She promised. She will look around carefully, and no more.
Egwene concentrated on the map. Careful. If she had not guarded her twisted stone ring so jealously, she thought of it as hers, the Hall of the Tower might not agree, but they did not know she had it. If she had been willing to let Elaine or Nynaeve use it more than once or twice, they might know enough to come with her now. Yet it was not regret that made her avoid looking at the other women. She did not want them to see the fear in her eyes.
Telairan Riod, the unseen world, the world of dreams.
Not the dreams of ordinary people, though sometimes they touched Telairan Riod briefly, in dreams that seemed as true as life, because they were. In the unseen world, what happened was real, in a strange way. Nothing that happened there affected what was. A door opened in the world of dreams would still be shut in the real world. A tree cut down there still stood here. Yet a woman could be killed there, or stilled. Strange barely began to describe it. In the unseen world, the whole world lay open, and maybe other worlds too. Any place was attainable. Or at least its reflection in the world of dreams was. The weave of the pattern could be read there, past, present, and future, by one who knew how. By a dreamer. There had not been a dreamer in the White Tower since Corianan Nadil, nearly 500 years earlier.
473 years, to be exact, Egwene thought.
Or is it 474 now? When did Corianan die? If Egwene had had a chance to finish novice training in the tower, to study there as an accepted, perhaps she would know. There was so much she might have known then. A list lay in Egwene's pouch of the Turangrial, most small enough to slip into a pocket, that had been stolen by the Black Aja when they fled the tower. They all three had a copy. 13 of those stolen Turangrial had "no known use" written alongside, and "last studied by Corianan Nadil." But if Corianan Zadai had truly not discovered their uses, Egwene was sure of one of them. They gave entrance to Telairan Riod, not as easily as the stone ring, perhaps, and perhaps not without channeling, but they did it. 2 they had recovered from Joya and Amiko, an iron disc 3 inches across, scribed on both sides with a tight spiral, and a plaque no longer than her hand, apparently clear amber, yet hard enough to scratch steel, with a sleeping woman somehow carved into the middle of it. Amiko had spoken freely of them, and so had Joya, after a session alone in her cell with Moiraine that had left the dark friend pale-faced and almost civil. Channel a flow of spirit into either Terangrial, and it would take you into sleep and then into Telairan Riod. Elaine had tried both of them briefly, and they worked, though all she saw was the inside of the stone and Morgaze's royal palace in Camelin. Egwene had not wanted her to try, however fleeting the visit, but not from jealousy.
She had not been able to argue very effectively, though, for she had been afraid Elaine and Nynaeve would hear what was in her voice. 2 recovered meant 11 still with the Black Aja. That was the point Egwene had tried to make. 11 Turangrial that could take a woman to Tel Iron Riad, all in the hands of Black Sisters. When Elaine made her short journeys into the unseen world, she could have found the Black Aja waiting for her, or walked into them before she knew they were there. The thought made Egwene's stomach writhe. They could be waiting for her now. Not likely, not on purpose. How would they know she was coming? But they could be there when she stepped through. One she could face, unless she was caught by surprise, and she did not mean to allow that. But if they did surprise her, 2 or 3 of them together, Leandrin and Rihanna, Chesmal Emery and Gianna Kaida and all the rest at once? Frowning at the map, she made her hands loosen their white-knuckled grip. Tonight had given everything urgency. If Shadow Spawn could attack the stone, if one of the Forsaken could suddenly appear in their midst, she could not give in to fear. They had to know what to do. They had to have something besides Amiko's vague tale. Something. If only she could learn where Mazrim Time was in his caged journey to Tar Valon, or if she could somehow slip into the Ammerlin's dreams and speak to her. Perhaps those things were possible for a dreamer. If they were, she did not know how. Tanchika was what she had to work with.
I must go alone, Avienda. I must.
She thought her voice was calm and steady, but Elaine patted her shoulder. Egwene did not know why she was scrutinizing the map. She already had it fixed in her head, everything in relation to everything else. Whatever existed in this world existed in the world of dreams, and sometimes more besides, of course. She had her destination chosen. She thumbed through the book to the only engraving showing the inside of a building named on the map, the Panarch's Palace. It would do no good to find herself in a chamber if she had no idea where it was in the city. None of it might do any good in any case. She put that out of her mind. She had to believe there was some chance. The engraving showed a large room with a high ceiling. A rope strung along waist-high posts would keep anyone from going too close to the things displayed on stands and in open-fronted cabinets along the walls. Most of those displays were indistinct, but not what stood at the far end of the room. The artist had taken pains to show the massive skeleton standing there as if the rest of the creature had that moment disappeared. It had 4 thick-boned legs, but otherwise resembled no animal Egwene had ever seen. For one thing, it had to stand at least 2 spans high, well over twice her height. The rounded skull, set low on the shoulders like a bull's, looked big enough for a child to climb inside, and in the picture it seemed to have 4 eye sockets. The skeleton marked the room off from any other. There was no mistaking it for anything but itself, whatever it was. If Urien Romavny had known, he had not named it in these pages. "What is a Panarch, anyway?" she asked, laying the book aside. She had studied the picture 12 times. "All of these writers seem to think you know already." "The Panarch of Tanchico is the equal of the king in authority," Elaine recited. "She is responsible for collecting taxes, customs, and duties, he for spending them properly. She controls the civil watch and the courts, except for the High Court, which is the king's. The army is his, of course, except for the Panarch's legion.
I didn't really want to know," Egwene sighed. It had only been something to say, another few moments to delay what she was going to do.
The candle was burning down. She was wasting precious minutes. She knew how to step out of the dream when she wanted, how to wake herself, but time passed differently in the world of dreams, and it was easy to lose track. "As soon as it reaches the mark," she said, and Elaine and Nynaeve murmured reassurances. Settling back on her feather pillows, at first she only stared at the ceiling, painted with blue sky and clouds and swooping swallows. She did not see them. Her dreams had been bad enough lately, most of them. Rand was in them, of course. Rand as tall as a mountain, walking through cities, crushing buildings beneath his feet, with screaming people like ants fleeing from him.
Rand in chains, and it was he who was screaming. Rand building a wall with him on one side and her on the other, her and Elaine and others she could not make out. "It has to be done," he was saying as he piled up stones. "I'll not let you stop me now." These were not the only nightmares. She had dreamed of Aiel fighting each other, killing each other, even throwing away their weapons and running as if they had gone mad. Matt, wrestling with a Shanchan woman who tied an invisible leash to him. A wolf, she was sure it was Perrin, though, fighting a man whose face kept changing. Galad wrapping himself in white as though putting on his own shroud, and Gawain with his eyes full of pain and hatred. Her mother weeping. They were the sharp dreams, the ones she knew meant something. They were hideous, and she did not know what any of them meant. How could she presume to think she could find any meanings or clues in Tel Ai-Run-Riod? But there was no other choice. No other choice but ignorance, and she could not choose that. Despite her anxiety, going to sleep was no problem. She was exhausted. It was just a matter of closing her eyes and taking deep, regular breaths. She fixed in her thoughts the room in the Panarch's palace and the huge skeleton. Deep, regular breaths. She could remember how using the stone ring felt, the step into Tel Ai-Run-Riod. Deep, regular breaths. Egwene stepped back with a gasp, one hand to her throat. This close, the skeleton seemed even larger than she had thought, the bones bleached dull and dry. She stood right in front of it, inside the rope. A white rope, as thick as her wrist and apparently silk. She had no doubt this was Tel Ai-Run-Riod. The detail was as fine as reality, even for things half seen from the corner of her eye. That she could even be aware of the differences between this and an ordinary dream told her where she was. Besides, it felt right. She opened herself to Sayidar. A nick on the finger in the world of dreams would still be there on waking. There would be no waking from a killing stroke with the power, or even from a sword or a club. She did not intend to be vulnerable for an instant. Instead of her shift, she wore something very much like Avienda's Aiel garb, but in red brocaded silk. Even her soft boots, laced to the knee, were supple red leather, suitable for gloves, with gold stitching and laces. She laughed softly to herself. Clothes in Tel Ai-Run-Riod were what you wanted them to be. Apparently part of her mind wanted to be ready to move quickly, while another part wanted to be ready for a ball. It would not do. The red faded to grays and browns. The coat and breeches and boots became exact copies of the maiden's. No better, really. Not in a city. Abruptly, she was in a copy of the dresses Fael always wore. Dark, with narrow divided skirts, long sleeves, and a high, snug bodice. Foolish to worry about it. No one is going to see me except in their dreams, and few ordinary dreams reach here. It would make no difference if I were naked. For a moment, she was naked. Her face colored with embarrassment. There was no one there to see her, bare as in her bath, before she hastily brought the dark dress back, but she should have remembered how stray thoughts could affect things here, especially when you had embraced the power. Elaine and Nynaeve thought she was so knowledgeable. She knew a few of the rules of the unseen world, and knew there were 100, 1,000 more of which she was ignorant. Somehow she had to learn them, if she was to be the tower's first dreamer since Corianan. She took a closer look at the huge skull. She had grown up in a country village, and she knew what animal bones looked like. Not four eye sockets, after all. Two seemed to be for tusks of some kind instead, on either side of where its nose had been. Some sort of monstrous boar, perhaps, though it looked like no pig skull she had ever seen. It had a feel of age, though. Great age. With the power in her, she could sense things like that here. The usual enhancements of senses was with her, of course. She could feel tiny cracks in the gilded plaster bosses covering the ceiling 50 feet up, and the smooth polish of the white stone floor. Infinitesimal cracks, invisible to the eye, spread across the floor stones as well. The chamber was huge, perhaps 200 paces long and nearly half as wide, with rows of thin white columns, and that white rope running all the way around, except where there were doorways with double-pointed arches. more ropes encircled polished wooden stands and cabinets holding other exhibits out in the floor. Up under the ceiling, an elaborate pattern of tiny carvings pierced the walls, letting in plenty of light. Apparently she had dreamed herself into a Tanchico where it was day. A grand display of artifacts of ages long past, of the age of legends and ages before, open to all, even the common folk, 3 days in the month and on feast days, Yurian Romavny had written. He had spoken in glowing terms of the priceless display of Quain Diyar figures, 6 of them, in a glass-sided case in the center of the hall, always watched by 4 of the Panarch's personal guards when people were allowed in, and had gone on for 2 pages about the bones of fabulous beasts, never seen alive by the eyes of man. Egwene could see some of those. On one side of the room was the skeleton of something that looked a little like a bear, if a bear had 2 front teeth as long as her forearm, and opposite it on the other side were the bones of some slender 4-footed beast with a neck so long the skull was half as high as the ceiling. There were more, spaced down the chamber's walls, just as fantastic. All of them felt old enough to make the Stone of Tyr seem new-built. Ducking under the rope barrier, she walked down the chamber slowly, staring. A weathered stone figurine of a woman, seemingly unclothed but wrapped in hair that fell to her ankles, was outwardly no different from the others sharing its case, each not much bigger than her hand. But it gave an impression of soft warmth that she recognized. It was an Angreal, she was sure. She wondered why the tower had not managed to get it away from the Panarch. A finely jointed collar and 2 bracelets of dull black metal, on a stand by themselves, made her shiver. She felt darkness and pain associated with them. Old, old pain and sharp. A silvery thing in another cabinet, like a 3-pointed star inside a circle, was made of no substance she knew. It was softer than metal, scratched and gouged, yet even older than any of the ancient bones. From 10 paces she could sense pride and vanity. One thing actually seemed familiar, though she could not say why. Tucked into a corner of one of the cabinets, as if whoever put it there had been uncertain that it was worthy of display, lay the upper half of a broken figure carved from some shiny white stone. A woman holding a crystal sphere in one upraised hand, her face calm and dignified and full of wise authority. Whole she would have been perhaps 1 foot tall, but why did she appear so familiar? She almost seemed to call to Egwene to pick her up. Not until Egwene's fingers closed on the broken statuette did she realize she had climbed over the rope. Foolish, when I don't know what it is, she thought, but it was already too late. As her hand grasped it, the power surged within her, into the half-figure, then back into her, into the figure and back, in and back. The crystal sphere flickered in fitful, lurid flashes, and needles stabbed her brain with each flash. With a sob of agony, she loosed her hold and clasped both hands to her head. The crystal sphere shattered as the figure hit the floor and broke into pieces, and the needles vanished, leaving only dull memories of the pain and a queasiness that wobbled her knees. She squeezed her eyes shut so she could not see the room heaving. The figure had to be a Turangrial, but why had it hurt her like that when she only touched it? Perhaps because it was broken. Perhaps, broken, it could not do what it was meant for. She did not even want to think of what it might have been made for. Testing Turangrial was dangerous. At least it must be broken beyond danger now. Here, at least. Why did it seem to call me? Nausea faded and she opened her eyes. The figure was back on the shelf, as whole as it had been when she first saw it. Strange things happened in Tel Irunriod, but that was stranger than she wanted to see. And this was not what she had come for. First, she had to find her way out of the Panarch's palace. Climbing back over the rope, she hurried out of the chamber, trying not to run. The place was empty of life, of course. Human life, at least. Colorful fish swam in large fountains that splashed merrily in the courtyards, surrounded by delicately columned walks and balconies screened by stonework, like intricately carved lace. Lily pads floated on the waters, and white flowers as big as dinner plates. In the world of dreams, a place was as it was in the so-called real world, except for people. Elaborate golden lamps stood in the hallways, wicks uncharred, but she could smell the perfumed oil in them. Her feet raised no hint of dust from the bright carpets that surely could never have been beaten, not here. Once she did see another person walking ahead of her, a man in gilded, ornately worked plate and mail armor, a pointed golden helmet crested with white egret plumes under his arm.
"Aeldra," he called, smiling. "Aeldra, come look at me. I am named the Lord Captain of the Panarch's Legion. Aeldra."
He walked on another pace, still calling, and suddenly was not there. Not a dreamer. Not even someone using a Turangrial like her stone ring or a Miko's iron disc. Only a man whose dream had touched a place he was not aware of, with dangers he did not know. People who died unexpectedly in their sleep had often dreamed their way into Tel Iran-Riad, and in truth had died there. He was well out of it, back into an ordinary dream. The candle was burning down beside that bed back in Tyr. Her time in Tel Iran-Riad was burning away. Hastening her steps, she came to tall, carved doors leading outside, to wide white stairs and a huge empty square. Tanchico spread out in every direction across steep hills, white buildings upon white buildings shining in the sun, hundreds of thin towers and almost as many pointed domes, some gilded. The Panarch's Circle, a tall, round wall of white stone, stood in plain sight not half a mile away and a little lower than the palace. The Panarch's Palace rose atop one of the loftiest hills. At the top of the deep stairs, she was high enough to see water glinting to the west, inlets separating her from more hilly fingers where the rest of the city lay. Tanchico was larger than Tyr, perhaps larger than Camelin. So much to search, and she did not even know for what. For something that signified the presence of the Black Aja, or something that indicated some sort of danger to Rand, if either existed here. Had she been a real dreamer, trained in the use of her talent, she would surely have known what to look for, how to interpret what she saw. But no one remained who could teach her. Aiel, wise ones, supposedly knew how to decipher dreams. Avienda had been so reluctant to talk about the wise ones that Egwene had not asked any of the other Aiel. Perhaps a wise one could teach her, if she could find one. She took a step toward the square, and suddenly she was somewhere else. Great stone spires rose around her in a heat that sucked the moisture out of her breath. The sun seemed to bake right through her dress, and the breeze blowing in her face seemed to come from a stove. Stunted trees dotted a landscape almost bare of other growth, except for a few patches of tough grass and some prickly plants she did not recognize. She recognized the lion, however, even if she had never seen one in the flesh. It lay in a crevice in the rocks not 20 paces away, black-tufted tail switching idly, looking not at her but at something another 100 strides on. The large boar, covered in coarse hair, was rooting and snuffling at the base of a thorny bush, never noticing the Aiel woman creeping up on it with a spear ready to thrust. Garbed like the Aiel in the stone, she had her shufa around her head, but her face uncovered. "The waist," Egwene thought incredulously. "I've jumped into the Aiel waist. When will I learn to watch what I think here?" The Aiel woman froze. Her eyes were on Egwene now, not the boar. If it was a boar, it did not seem to be shaped exactly right. Egwene was sure the woman was not a wise one, not dressed like a maiden, from what Egwene had been told. A maiden of the spear who wanted to become a wise one had to give up the spear. This had to be just an Aiel woman who had dreamed herself into Tel Iran-Riad, like that fellow in the palace. He would have seen her too, if he had ever turned around. Egwene closed her eyes and concentrated on her one clear image of Tanchico, that huge skeleton in the great hall. When she opened them again, she was staring at the massive bones. They had been wired together, she noticed this time, quite cleverly, so that the wires hardly showed at all. The half-figurine with its crystal spheres was still on its shelf. She did not go near it, any more than the black collar and bracelets that felt of so much pain and suffering. The Angreal, the stone woman, was a temptation. What are you going to do with it? Light, you're here to look, to search. Nothing more than that. Get on with it, woman. This time she quickly found her way back to the square. Time passed differently here. Elaine and Nynaeve could be waking her up any moment, and she still had not even begun. There might be no more minutes to waste. She had to be careful of what she thought from here on. No more thinking about the wise ones. Even the admonition made everything lurch around her. Keep your mind on what you are doing, she told herself firmly. She set out through the empty city, walking fast, sometimes trotting. Winding, stone-paved streets slanted up and down, curving every which way, all empty, except for green-backed pigeons and pale gray gulls that rose in thunderclaps of wings when she came close. Why birds and not people? Flies buzzed by, and she could see roaches and beetles scurrying along in the shadows. A pack of lean dogs, all different colors, loped across the street far ahead of her. Why dogs? She pulled herself back to why she was there. What would be a sign of the Black Adja, or of this danger to Rand, if it existed? Most of the white buildings were plastered, the plaster chipped and cracked, often showing weathered wood or pale brown brick beneath. Only the towers and the larger structures, palaces, she supposed, were stone, if still white. Even the stone had tiny fissures, though, most of it. Cracks too minute for the eye to catch, but she could feel them with the power in her, spider-webbing domes and towers. Perhaps that meant something. Perhaps it meant Tanchico was a city not looked after by its inhabitants. As likely that as anything else. She jumped as a shrieking man suddenly plummeted out of the sky in front of her. She only had time to register baggy white trousers and thick mustaches covered by a transparent veil before he vanished, only a pace above the pavement. Had he struck here in Tel Iron Riad, he would have been found dead in his bed. He probably has as much to do with anything as the roaches, she told herself. Perhaps something inside the buildings. It was a small chance, a wild hope, but she was desperate enough to try anything, almost anything. Time. How much time did she have left? She began running from doorway to doorway, putting her head into shops and inns and houses. Tables and benches stood in common rooms awaiting customers, as neatly arranged as the dully gleaming pewter mugs and plates on their shelves. The shops were as tidy as if the shopkeeper had just opened for the morning, yet while a tailor's tables held bolts of cloth and a cutler's knives and scissors, the ceiling hooks hung empty in a butcher's shop, and the shelves stood bare. A finger run along anywhere picked up no dust at all. Everything was clean enough to suit her mother. In the narrower streets there were homes, small, simple, white-plastered buildings with flat roofs and no windows onto the street, ready for families to walk in and sit on benches before cold fireplaces, or around narrow tables with carved legs, where a goodwife's best bowl or platter was given pride of place. Clothes hung on pegs, pots hung from ceilings, hand tools lay on benches, waiting. On a hunch, she retraced her steps once, just to see, back a dozen doors, and peered a second time into what was some woman's home in the real world. It was almost the way it had been. Almost. The red-striped bowl that had been on the table was now a narrow blue vase. One of the benches, on it a broken harness and the tools for mending it, that had been near the fireplace, now sat by the door, holding a darning basket and a child's embroidered dress. Why did it change, she wondered. But for that matter, why should it stay the same? Light. I don't know anything. There was a stable across the street, the white plaster showing large patches of brick. She trotted to it and pulled open one of the big doors. Straw covered the dirt floor, just as in every stable she'd ever seen, but the stalls stood empty. No horses. Why? Something rustled in the straw, and she realized the stalls were not empty after all. Rats. Dozens of them, staring at her boldly, noses testing the air for her scent. None of the rats ran or even shied away. They behaved as if they had more right there than she. In spite of herself, she stepped back. Pigeons and gulls and dogs, flies and rats. Maybe a wise one would know why. As suddenly as that, she was back in the waste. With a scream, she fell flat on her back as the hairy, boar-like creature darted straight for her, looking as large as a small pony. Not a pig, she saw as it leaped nimbly over her. The snout was too sharp and full of keen teeth, and it had four toes on each foot. The thought was calm, but she shuddered as the beast scampered away through the rocks. It was big enough to have trampled her, breaking bones and worse. Those teeth could have ripped and torn as well as any wolf's. She would have awakened with the wounds, if she had waked at all. The gritty rock under her back was a blistering stovetop. She scrambled to her feet, angry with herself. If she could not keep her mind on what she was doing, she would accomplish nothing. Tanchika was where she was supposed to be. She had to concentrate on that, nothing else. She stopped brushing at her skirts when she saw the Aiel woman watching her with sharp blue eyes from 10 paces off. The woman was Avienda's age, no older than herself, but the wisps of hair that stuck out from under her shufa were so pale as to be almost white. The spear in her hands was ready to be cast, and at that distance she was not likely to miss. The Aiel were said to be more than rough with those who entered the waste without permission. Egwene knew she could wrap woman and spear in air, hold them safely, but would the flows keep long enough when she began to fade? Or would they just anger the woman enough to make her cast her spear the moment she was able, perhaps before Egwene was truly gone? Much good it would do to take herself back to Tanchika with an Aiel spear through her. If she tied the flows, that would leave the woman trapped in Tel Irunriod until they were unraveled, helpless if that lion or the boar-like creature returned. No, she simply needed the woman to lower her spear, just long enough to feel safe closing her eyes, to take herself back to Tanchika, back to what she was supposed to be doing. She had no more time for these flights of fancy. She was not entirely sure someone who'd only dreamed themselves into Tel Irunriod could harm her the way other things there could, but she was not going to risk finding out with an Aiel spear point. The Aiel woman should vanish in a few moments, something to put her off balance until then. Changing her clothes was easy. As soon as the thought came, Egwene was wearing the same browns and grays as the woman. "I mean you no harm," she said, outwardly calm. The woman did not lower her weapon. Instead, she frowned and said, "You have no right to wear Cadin Sor, girl." And Egwene found herself standing there in her skin, the sun burning her from overhead, the ground searing her bare feet. For a moment she gaped in disbelief, dancing from foot to foot. She had not thought it possible to change things about someone else. So many possibilities, so many rules that she did not know. Hurriedly she thought herself back into stout shoes and the dark dress with its divided skirts, and at the same time made the Aiel woman's garments vanish. She had to draw on Sidar to do it. The woman must have been concentrating on keeping Egwene naked. She had a flow ready to seize the spear if the other woman made to throw it. It was the Aiel woman's turn to look shocked. She let the spear fall to her side, too, and Egwene seized the moment to shut her eyes and take herself back to Tanchika, back to the skeleton of that huge boar. Or whatever it was. She barely gave it a second glance this time. She was growing tired of things that looked like boars and were not. How did she do that? No. It's wondering about how and why that keeps pulling me off the path. This time I'll stick to it. She did hesitate, though. Just as she had closed her eyes, it had seemed she saw another woman beyond the Aiel woman watching them both. A golden-haired woman holding a silver bow. You are letting wild fancies take you now. You've been listening to too many of Tom Marilyn's stories. Birgitta was long dead. She could not come again until the Horn of Valir called her back from the grave. Dead women, even heroes of legend, surely could not dream themselves into Tel Irunriod. It was only a moment's pause, though. Shutting off futile speculation, she ran back to the square. How much time did she have left? The whole city to search, and time slipping away, and she as ignorant as when she started. If only she had some idea of what to look for, or where. Running did not seem to tire her here in the world of dreams, but run as hard as she might, she would never cover the entire city before Elaine and Nynaeve woke her. She did not want to have to come back. A woman appeared suddenly among the flock of pigeons that had gathered in the square. Her gown was pale green, thin and draped closely enough to have satisfied Berylaine. Her dark hair was in dozens of narrow braids, and her face was covered to the eyes by a transparent veil like the one the falling man had worn. The pigeons soared up, and so did the woman, gliding over the nearest rooftops with them before abruptly winking out of existence. Egwene smiled. She dreamed of flying like a bird all the time, and this was a dream, after all. She leaped into the air and kept going up, toward the roofs. She wobbled as she thought how ridiculous this was. Flying? People did not fly. Then steadied again as she forced herself to be confident. She was doing it, and that was all there was to it. This was a dream, and she was flying. The wind rushed in her face, and she wanted to laugh giddily. She skimmed across the Panarch Circle, where rows of stone benches slanted down from the high wall to a broad field of packed dirt in the center. Imagine so many people gathered, and to watch a fireworks display by the Guild of Illuminators themselves. Back home, fireworks were a rare treat. She could remember the handful of times in her life Emmons Field had had them, with the grown-ups as excited as the children. She sailed over rooftops like a falcon, over palaces and mansions, humble dwellings and shops, warehouses and stables. She slid by domes topped with golden spires and bronze weather vanes, by towers ringed with lacy stone balconies. Carts and wagons dotted wagon yards waiting. Ships crowded the great harbor and the fingers of water between the city's peninsulas. They lined the docks. Everything seemed in a poor state of repair from the carts to the ships, but nothing she saw pointed to the Black Adja, as far as she knew. She considered trying to envision Leandrin. She knew that doll's face all too well, with its multitude of blonde braids, its self-satisfied brown eyes, and its smirking rosebud mouth. Picture her in the hopes she might be drawn to where the Black Sister was. But if it worked, she might find Leandrin in Tel Iron Riad, too, and maybe others of them. She was not ready for that. It suddenly occurred to her that if any of the Black Adja were in Tanchico, in the Tanchico of Tel Iron Riad, she was flaunting herself for them. Any eye looking at the sky would notice a woman flying, one who did not vanish after a few moments. Her smooth flight staggered, and she swooped down below roof level, floating along the streets more slowly than before, but still faster than a horse could run. She might be rushing toward them, but she could not make herself stop and wait for them. Fool, she called herself furiously. Fool, they could know I'm here now. They could be laying a trap already. She considered stepping out of the dream, back to her bed in Tyr, but she had found nothing, if there was anything to find. A tall woman was suddenly standing in the street ahead of her, slim in a bulky brown skirt and loose white blouse, with a brown shawl around her shoulders and a folded scarf around her forehead to hold white hair that spilled to her waist. Despite her plain clothes, she wore a great many necklaces and bracelets of gold or ivory or both. Fists planted on her hips, she stared straight at Egwene, frowning. Another fool woman who's dreamed herself where she has no right to be and doesn't believe what she's seeing, Egwene thought. She had the description of every woman who had gone with Leandrin, and this woman certainly matched none of them. But the woman did not vanish again. She stood there as Egwene approached swiftly. Why doesn't she go? Why? Oh, light, she's really... She snatched for the flows to weave lightning, to tangle the woman in air, fumbling in startled haste. Put your feet on the ground, girl, the woman barked. I had enough trouble finding you again without you flying off like some bird when I do. Abruptly, Egwene stopped flying. Her feet thumped hard on the pavement, and she staggered.
It was the Aiel woman's voice, but this was an older woman. Not as old as Egwene had thought at first. In fact, she looked much younger than her white hair suggested, but with the voice and those sharp blue eyes, she was sure was the same woman.
"You're different," she said.
"You can be what you wish to be here," the woman sounded embarrassed, but only a little. "At times I like to remember, that is not important. You are from the White Tower? It has been long since they had a dreamwalker, very long. I am Amys, of the Nine Valleys Sept of the Tardad Aiel."
"You are a wise one? You are! And you know dreams. You know Tel Iron Riad. You can... My name is Egwene, Egwene Alvear. I..."
She took a deep breath. Amys did not look a woman to lie to.
"I am Aes Sedai, of the Green Aja."
Amys's expression did not change, really. A slight crinkling of her eyes, perhaps in skepticism. Egwene hardly looked old enough to be full Aes Sedai. What she said, though, was, "I meant to leave you standing in your skin until you asked for some proper clothes. Putting on cut-in sore that way as though you were... You surprised me, pulling free as you did, turning my own spear on me. But you are still untaught, are you not, however strong? Else you would not have popped into the middle of my hunt that way, where you obviously did not wish to be. And this flying about? Did you come to Tel Iron Riad? Tel Iron Riad? To stare at this city, wherever it is?"
"It's Tanchico," Egwene said faintly.
She didn't know. But then how had Amys followed her, or found her? It was obvious she knew more of the world of dreams than Egwene did by far.
"You can help me. I'm trying to find women of the Black Aja, Dark Friends. I think they are here, and I have to find them if they are."
"It truly exists, then,"
Amys almost whispered it.
"An Aja of Shadow Runners in the White Tower."
She shook her head.
"You are like a girl just wedded to the spear who thinks now she can wrestle men and leap mountains. For her it means a few bruises and a valuable lesson in humility. For you, here, it could mean death."
Amys eyed the white buildings around them and grimaced.
"Tanchico? In Tarabon? This city is dying, eating itself. There is a darkness here, an evil, worse than men can make, or women."
She looked at Egwene pointedly.
"You cannot see it or feel it, can you? And you want to hunt shadow runners in Tel Iron Riad?"
"Evil," Egwene said quickly. "That could be them. Are you sure? If I told you what they look like, could you be certain it was them? I can describe them. I can describe one to her last braid."
"A child," Amys muttered, "demanding a silver bracelet from her father this minute when she knows nothing of trading or the making of bracelets. You have much to learn, far more than I can begin to teach you now. Come to the Threefold Land. I will have the word spread through the clans that an Aes Sedai called Egwene Alvear is to be brought to me at Cold Rock's Hold. Give your name and show your great serpent ring, and you will have safe running. I am not there now, but I will return from Roedin before you can arrive."
"Please, you must help me. I need to know if they are here. I have to know."
"But I cannot tell you. I do not know them, or this place, this Tanchico. You must come to me. What you do is dangerous, far more dangerous than you know. You must...
Where are you going? Stay!"
Something seemed to snatch at Egwene, pulling her into darkness. Amys's voice followed her, hollow and dwindling.
"You must come to me and learn. You must